Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The days are longer, afternoons are warmer. Time to break out those flip-flops and think about what we're going to read this summer. On the beach, in the backyard, in whatever long, lazy days or hours we can grab. My guests today, book lovers and book critics all, will help us scan the shelves. This hour, On Point, Great Summer Reads 09. You can join the conversation. What are you reading, planning to read this summer? What do you recommend and why? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have book giants with us from New York, Liesl Schillinger, contributor to the New York Times Book Review. Liesl, welcome back. It's always great to have you.
Hello, Tom.
From Seattle, we're joined by Jamil Zaidi, manager of the popular independent bookstore there, the Elliott Bay Book Company. Jamil, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
We're expecting Lori Herzl from St. Paul, Minnesota, in just a minute, but let's dive right in. First, to get your philosophy, Jamil, do you have a special kind of book you recommend for summer, or is it just good books no matter the season?
Pretty much good books no matter the season. I'm a fiction specialist, I suppose. I'm in charge of the fiction section at the store, so I think fantasy and fiction is fun for the summertime, especially.
And you're in a store. Is traffic looking for books up or down in this economic crisis, whatever you want to call it, recession, depression, whatever we have?
Well, I think books are something that kind of remains constant. People, you get a very good value for your money with a book as opposed to a movie or something like that. So we're looking pretty much the same. People are maybe buying less expensive books now than they were before. But I think that, you know, folks still enjoy reading, which is a very, very good thing.
That's a good thing. Liesl, do you tag books summer, winter, spring, fall, or just good reads?
Well, I read pretty much incessantly, but yeah. In summer, I just like a book that I can live in. I do have a week or two in the summer where I'm at a lake or by a beach, and you just like a book that you can lose time in, that creates such a total world around you. So I think I have more time to appreciate a leisurely read in summer.
Fantastic. It sounds like just what everybody wants to have. You both got great lists here. Let's dive right in. What's at the very top of your list this summer, Liesl?
Well, a book that I want everyone to read is a buried classic that came out in 1947 and wasn't translated into English. It's a thriller based on an absolutely true story about a husband and wife who mounted an anti-Hitler campaign in Germany. It's called Every Man Dies Alone, written by Hans Fallada. And this book is just you cannot put it down. It's chilling. But what's so amazing about it is that no one has read a lot of books about what it was like for the Germans who weren't Jewish in Berlin in the 1940s under Hitler. And there's a tendency to avoid even thinking about that period because it's so bleak. But this man brings alive this cast of characters that show what everyday life and terrors were like for everyday people in Berlin. The man is Hans Fallada, and he was just a great observer and a great listener to dialect. He creates 60 different voices and just brings a whole world alive that is a pretty grim world, but it just casts a spell as you read.
Amazing. Every Man Dies Alone, and this is anything but hot off the presses, came out in 1947 originally,
in
written in 24 days here, I see, by Hans Fallada, and it's that sort of personal refusal to be corrupted or to try not to be corrupted in the midst of Hitler's Nazi Germany. Jamil, what's at the top of your list?
Top of my list is a debut novel called The Selected Works of T.S. Spivet by Rafe Larson. And this is a very, very unusual novel. It's annotated. The marginalia is filled with these notes and drawings. And as you read, you understand the point of them. The story is of a young boy who's growing up on his family's ranch in Montana. And he is obsessed with mapping things geographically as well as just spatially and relationships between other things. And so these drawings and marginal notes are sort of his scientific observations of the world.
And it's T.S. Spivet, as in Tecumseh Sparrow Spivet.
Exactly.
He's got notes here on
Tecumseh
quantum Spivet. Mechanics and Darwinism and creationism. And is it kind of a I know nothing about it. Is it a science fiction thing? Is it a human nature?
I would say more human nature. Very heartwarming story. It's sort of coming of age. Basically, the premise is he embarks on this journey. A series of circumstances leads him to need to get to the Smithsonian Museum. And he's in Montana, and he's a young boy, so he can't drive. And so it's basically his chronicle of this journey of getting himself to the Smithsonian, and it's fascinating to see the world through his eyes.
The Selected Works of T.S. Spivet, it's by Reef Larson. If you want to, it says here, I'm reading something about the cultural impact of McDonald's on loneliness, Chicago litter, Newton's three laws of motion, and all that off a Montana ranch. Jamil Zaidi is with us from Seattle, Liesl Schillinger from New York, and right now, we're joined as well from St. Paul, Minnesota, by Laurie Hertzel. She's senior editor for books and special projects at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Laurie, glad we got you. Welcome to the fray.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. And we're enjoying hearing everybody's list. Tell us what's at the top of yours for this summer, Laurie.
The top of my list has a very wonderful book out of Nigeria. It's called They Do Not Come to You by Chance by Adebi Trisha Wabani. It's a novel about a young man named Kingsley, whose parents were British-educated Nigerians, and they're back in Nigeria. He's gone to college. He's trying to make a way in the world, but with the government the way it is and with jobs the way they are, he can't find a job. So he gets kind of sucked into his uncle's business, which is writing those scamming emails that we all get from Nigeria,
right,
which is where the title comes from. It's just a wonderful book because his uncle, who's called Cash Daddy, is this rich and complex character. He's very funny. He's very wealthy. He's got the bodyguards and the Range Rovers and several houses and lots of girlfriends and tons of money. It's a very lucrative business, but he's also a very generous guy. He takes care of his family. He builds schools and orphanages, and it shows that, you know, this is not all evil. It's a very funny book. You've got great sense of place of Nigeria, Nigerian terms and scenes. It's just a wonderful read.
And that is I Do Not Come to You by Chance, and the author's Adebi Trisha Wabani, spelled starting with an N, and I should say right here we have all of these books and lists from our wonderful guests up at our website, onpointradio.org. So if you don't catch it, check it out at the website. High on your list, I also see here, Laurie, another book with a story out of Africa, Helene Cooper's The House at Sugar Beach. We talked to her about the book when it first came out. She's, of course, was New York Times diplomatic correspondent, now at the White House, writing about how in 1980, her wealthy family was forced to flee Liberia for North Carolina, and she goes back and thinks about that childhood on the beach there in Africa. Here's a little bit of her reading from her memoir.
This was our house at Sugar Beach, a futuristic three-level veranda 1970s-era behemoth with a massive glass dome on top, visible as soon as you turned onto the dirt road junction a mile away. The house revealed itself slowly, like a coquettish Parisian dancer from the 1920s. Emerging from the road's first major pothole, big enough to swallow a small European car, your reward was a glimpse of the house's sloping roof and glass dome, shining in the equatorial sun. Rounding the bend between the dense bush of plum trees and vines, you next got a glimpse of the house's eastern wraparound second-floor porches, painted creamy butter, with a roasted red pepper trim, hand-selected for tropical contrast.
Beautiful description. The action gets pretty exciting as well. That's Helene Cooper reading from her The House at Sugar Beach. Came out last year, and Laurie Hertzel, it's still near the top of your list for the summer of 09.
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful book. It got a lot of attention when it first came out, but I know that a lot of people haven't heard of it. There's just so many books, and I didn't want this one to get lost just because it came out last fall. It has a great story. She gives you the language, the history, great sense of place again of Liberia, and then, of course, the journey where she comes to America and then goes back to Liberia trying to find the foster sister that she left behind. So it has a little mystery to it as well. It's a great tale.
Liesl, take us on down your list a bit. You've got Low Boy by John Ray here and Little Bee by Chris Cleave. Tell us about that.
Well, You know, Little B is actually connected to Nigeria as well. Mm-hmm. This is a fanciful fiction. Chris Cleave writes for The Guardian, lives in Paris. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful imaginer. And this is a story about an English magazine editor who goes with her husband to a romantic holiday on a beach in Nigeria and meets a young girl called Little B, who's 14, at a moment of incredible stress and conflict. I won't go into what happens. Mm. But Little B ends up coming to England, and at some point, I just think the writing is so fanciful. This book is about globalization. It's about marital boredom. It's about war and vacation. It's this book is just really hard to describe, but it's a lot of fun.
Little B by Chris Cleave and Low Boy by John Ray with a W.
I'm so impressed by this book. Low Boy is it's so people always talk about books being visual. This book is auditory. You can hear him. You can hear the man talking and thinking, the man actually being a schizophrenic 16-year-old who's escaped from his mental hospital and gone onto the B train uptown. And he's gone off his meds, and he thinks that the end of the world is going to happen. And he's a disturbing character, but there's this music in the way that the subway is described. And John Ray wrote nearly all of this book in the subway, which is kind of fun when you think of how you've used your time underground. He wrote this interesting novel, and it really sticks with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about summer books, summer reads, best reads, great escapes, good books for this summer. You can join the conversation with Liesl Schillinger, Jamil Zaidi, and Laurie Herzl, great book lovers and critics, examiners, all kinds of books can grab you in the summer. It may be way out fiction. It may be some kind of exploration. One of those on Laurie's list happens here to begin Reading the OED. This is by Ammon Shea, author of Reading the OED, One Man, One Year, 21,730 pages. He talked about, joined us actually late last year, and talked about reading the mountainous Oxford English Dictionary and how he came to love what certain words stood for, what they evoked. Here's a snippet of that conversation with Ammon Shea from last August.
A word like apricity, which it's really not ever been in common usage. I believe it was only the OED found it in one dictionary from the early 17th century. And apricity describes the warmth of the sun in wintertime.
Mm. And that sort of pale, light, but distinct warmth, different from summer warmth.
Right. This is a word that I sincerely hope I will never work into general conversation. And if I do, I sincerely hope that whoever I'm talking to will poke me in the eye for using it. I'm not a fan of using big words for their own sake. However, I do find now that in the summertime, when I am, say, bathed in that warmth of the winter sun, I am more cognizant of the fact that it's happening, knowing that there is a word with which to describe it.
Ammon Shea, author of Reading the OED, with us on Point. Laurie Herzl recommends him in the summer of 09. Let's hear from some listeners. David in San Francisco, good to hear from you. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Hey, I just happened to find, and I've been up a good share of the night just reading this. I found it in the new nonfiction at the San Francisco Public Library. It's called A Jury of Her Peers, American Woman Writers from Ann Badstreet to Ann Pollux by Elaine Showalter. Has any of you folks heard of it?
Yes, I'm sure. Liesl, tell us what you know. David swept away by it in San Francisco.
Well, I actually had a tributary. I didn't mean to interrupt. I had a tributary comment, but I think that's great to read, and I'm also glad that he's looking into his library. I was very moved yesterday going to get these titles to find that all 12 of my big picks were checked out. And not only were they checked out, there were hundreds of holds on them, literally 300 holds on Malcolm Gladwell's book, his nonfiction book, Outliers.
Yes.
200 holds on 309 holds on Low Boy. People are reading. I had to go to Barnes & Noble to get every one of these books to refresh my memory. People are using their libraries. And maybe the economy's troubles are readers' gain.
209 holds on a book. It could be the summer of 2012 before we get to that one. But David's reading Elaine Showalter's A Jury of Her Peers on American writers, and lots of people have loved it. Let's hear from New York City, Jermaine. Jermaine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to recommend a book for people who've just gotten laid off. A lot of people, I guess, just gotten laid off recently, and someone gave me this book when I got laid off a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And it's about a guy who got laid off. It's The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle by Haruki Murakami, a Japanese contemporary fiction writer. And it's about a guy who gets laid off from his job, kind of loses himself, and then finds himself again through a series of very surreal, bizarre, I don't know, events. But it's a great book.
The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle by Haruki Murakami. Great. Jermaine, we'll scratch it on our list right here. And let's get one more from Beth in Lexington, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, I really enjoy your show, and this is the first time I've ever called in.
Great. What do you know?
I just wanted to tell you all and all your listeners about a book that I could not put down, and I stayed up way too late reading, called
I just managed to catch that before your cell phone. Long Way Gone, about a boy soldier in Sierra Leone. Jamil, Laurie, Liesl, do you know it?
No, yeah. But I love getting these recommendations. I think I have enough to read in my job, but this one isn't one I'm not familiar with.
The Long Way Gone, Beth wants to recommend. Jamil, you've got a reading from something near the top of your list. What have you got for us?
Well, I suppose we could go into The Dark Side of Love by Rafiq Shami.
Okay.
This is one that, in the spirit of things not getting lost, this is an international bestseller, but it's kind of surfing under the radar over here. And it is a novel written in German. The author actually lives in Germany, but is a Syrian, and it takes place in Syria throughout the 20th century. It's an epic novel, story of forbidden love and betrayal and just all of these wonderful themes.
The Dark Side of Love by Rafiq Shami. Set us up a little bit before reading. What are we going to hear?
Well, it's really hard. It was really hard for me to choose a passage because it's this sweeping epic, and it's made up of these little vignettes. And Shami uses the metaphor of a mosaic for his writing, and how each of these vignettes is sort of a polished little short story on its own. Mm-hmm. But when you step back and look at the picture that he's created, it's this absolutely amazing vista before you. And so what I decided to choose was a piece that talks a little bit about the central love story, and then also that goes into a little bit about Damascus, because Damascus is really a central character in the story as well as the people there.
Let's hear it.
Rana was Farid's great good fortune. He loved her so much that he almost wished them to part so that he would be in no danger of persecution. He looked at her ear. He had to love her, if only for that innocent ear. Rana was silent for a long time. She seemed to be watching the children playing in the park, but in fact, the only girl attracted her attention. A child staging a performance on her own, a little away from a group. Dancing, she twirled in a circle, then suddenly stopped and sank to the ground as if hit by a bullet. A few moments later, she rose again and went on dancing, only to drop to the ground again quite soon. It was a long time since Damascus had seen such weather. All the good work of the winter rains was undone by the springtime cold. Flowers and buds froze. This was the first sunny day after a damp eternity. So I think that kind of sets the stage a little bit.
We hear it taking us right into Damascus. There's a punitive stay in a monastery here, persecution, incarceration, the entire chorus of Damascus life. We read in The Dark Side of Love by Rafiq Shami. Richard in Framingham, Massachusetts, you're on the air. What are you reading? What have you read?
Well, last thing I read was Indignation by Philip Roth. And I don't know if Philip Roth in his this late in life counts as summer reading because he gets increasingly depressing. But if you read one thing this summer, it needs to be The Adventures of a Reader by Calvino. It's a short story. And it's about a man who goes on summer vacation to read but finds himself distracted by what's going on the beach. And it's brilliant.
Great. Italo Calvino, The Adventures of a Reader. Richard, thank you very much. Liesl, take us on down your list. We've got Every Man Dies Alone, Low Boy, Little Bee. What next?
There are so many great books this summer. I'm overjoyed because this is a rich season. And not only are there new books, there are also at least four old books that have been brought back into print. After reading Roger Angel in The New Yorker, I'm dying to get The Garrick Year, Margaret Drabble's second novel from 1964, about a hot-headed young couple. They're both actors in the first years of their marriage in England. It's so wickedly seen. I mean, it's not that's not the right word. The woman who tells the story is very cynical. And I read that in the summer fiction issue, tried to get it, and found out that it's coming out from Penguin, some Penguin abroad this month.
Give us the title again.
It's called The Garrick Year. Mm-hmm. And it's just so full of life. She was 24 and she wrote it. Do you know Margaret Drabble used to be an actress?
Yes, but I
mm-hmm. And I just Clive James's completely side-splitting, unreliable memoir is newly out by Norton this month. When I read that in a theater 15 years ago in Germany, I burst out laughing. It was so improper of me, but it's hilarious about his rough and tumble childhood in Australia. And then there's a new translation of A Hero of Our Time out, Lermontov's wonderful story about the cad Pechorin. But back to some new books that I'm excited about.
Yeah.
The Help by Catherine Stockett. Mm-hmm. That's a book about black women who raise white babies in the South, told from their point of view in the 60s. So it's like Driving Miss Daisy or a little bit like Caroline or Change. But this is a first novel, and I think a lot of women will be reading this. It's immediately arresting. I don't want to read from it because it's written in dialect, and that's embarrassing to read out loud.
Read from something for us, Liesl. Anything you like here.
Can I go back and read from The Lowboy? Because I just love
The
sounds of John Ray's writing.
John Roy's Lowboy.
John Ray's Lowboy. The schizophrenic 16-year-old has just fled from his hospital. He's gone off his meds, clozapine, because they make him feel like he's being pressed under glass. And he's being chased into the subway by two of his minders from the hospital, whom he calls Skull and Bones.
Yeah.
So it goes, he got on board the train and laughed. Signs and tells were all around him. The floor was shivering and ticking beneath his feet, and the brick-tiled arches above the train beat the murmurings of the crowd into copper and aluminum foil. Every seat in the car had a person in it. Notes of music rang out as the doors closed behind him. C-sharp first, then A, sharp against both ears, like the tip of a pencil. He turned and pressed his face against the glass.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And, it really compelled me also because later we realized the drugs make him feel like he's under glass. It's what that whole which way he flies is hell Miltonian idea. But, you know, this book is picaresque and fun to read. It's disturbing as well. But
we've got suggestions. That's wonderful. Lowboy, John Ray. And we've got suggestions flowing in here online. Here's from Drew saying one of the books I've been loving lately is a mashup of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. Seth Graham Smith takes the tired old text and breathes it into it new life, or unlife, as it were. And he asks, can your guest suggest other great mashups like this? I have to say, I don't think I've ever read a mashup. Anybody have mashups in their scope? Jameel, Laurie?
No, I don't think
well,
so.
I watch
mashups online, but there's one of the Super Friends mixed with Office Space, that jaded movie about office politics.
Oh boy.
But no, this book is a phenomenon. It is it's the top of the fiction list, of the paperback list right now. It was huge on the internet. I opened the first page and I applaud your reader's interest and enthusiasm. I don't get it, though. It's about, you know, zombies running around in Pride and Prejudice and people, you know, the undead. I think they're called unmentionable.
Okay.
Listen, no disrespect, and this is really popular, but it's funny.
Jameel, you know one. What is a mashup anyway in a book? I mean, you literally sort of take some of the old text and put in new text?
Exactly, yeah. My understanding is what he did is he just copied and pasted the text into a Word document of the original Pride and Prejudice and then just typed in his own stuff in between in different colored font.
Oh boy.
And, you know, deleted where he saw fit. I haven't heard of any others of these yet, although I think because of the way things go and the way that this is such a phenomenon, there will be more coming down the line.
Here's another listener online. This is Jean saying she recently finished a rather depressing but outstanding book, The Vagrants. This is by Yiyun Lee. Paints a rather unpalatable picture of conditions in China after the Cultural Revolution. Seemed especially appropriate given the recent, that is today, 20th anniversary of the Tiananmen protests in 1989. Liesl, anybody? The Vagrants?
That was that was on hold at the library, and I couldn't even get it at Barnes & Noble.
Mm.
But I think it looks absolutely fascinating. If someone has been able to read it, I'd like them to talk about it besides me. But I do want to read, I think it's called Waiting by Ha Jin.
Yes.
Which,
he's been our guest. Wonderful.
That's just such a summer book that I'm hoping to read this summer, actually. That's why I bring it up. But if anyone else has actually read Ian Lee, they should talk about it, because that's on my list, but I couldn't get it.
It sounds pretty good, and yes, timely, given where we are. Let's go to Bethany, Connecticut, and Bruce. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
And the book I just finished reading is called Getting the Sex You Want.
Okay.
By author Tammy Nelson. It's nonfiction. It's kind of a self-help guide for couples. The author is a therapist, and it's taking some proven strategies and applying it to better communication skills for couples.
Well, and are you her agent, or is it really working for you? What's up, Bruce?
I discovered the book. Somebody recommended it to me, and it's absolutely fascinating. I think it's typically geared more for women, but I can tell you as a man, it opened my eyes dramatically.
Hey, yeah, it's summertime. Why not? Getting the Sex You Want by Tammy Nelson. Thank you very much.
Reading can help others.
yeah. Reading can help others. Can help all kinds of situations. Shauna in Hamilton, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm excited to read Martha's Vineyard author John Huff's new book called Seeing the Glory, a novel of the Battle of Gettysburg.
Great. I don't know much about it. Have you read it? What's drawn you to it, Shauna?
Well, I haven't read it yet, but I've read other works by him. And so I particularly like Civil War novels, you know, historical fiction. So I'm excited. I've read some reviews online. So I just want to mention it.
Sounds terrific. Thanks for that mention. Laurie Herzl, looking on down your list here, you've got The Moonflower Vine by Jetta Carlton. Tell us about it.
This is a really lovely book. It came out in 1962, high acclaim, great reviews, and then it just kind of fell away, went out of print, until last year Jane Smiley listed it on her list of 100 books that everyone should read. And so it's been republished now by Harper Perennial in this lovely little paperback. It's set in Missouri. It's a family saga, very complex story. The book is written in different points of view, so you get the father and you get the various daughters, and then the mother is the one who kind of ties up everything at the end. It's just a very beautifully written, you get the sense of Missouri and the farm and the heat and the lushness of living there. It's a lovely book.
And that was recommended by Jane Smiley. She, of course, wrote 1,000 Acres, which I thought caught that Midwestern farm world just wonderfully. Is it like that? Is it that ilk?
Well, it's a different kind of book, but yes, it does have that same strong sense of place. This is set, you know, in a different time, so it's, you know, it's a family saga. It covers several generations.
And then you've got this, that's The Moonflower Vine by Jetta Carlson. Then you've got The Soul Thief by Charles Baxter. Tell us about it.
Oh, well, Charles Baxter, I wanted to make sure that I included on my list, you know, some of the wonderful Minnesota writers. I've got Louise Erdrich here, also with The Red Convertible. The Red. You know, she was a Pulitzer finalist this year for Plague of Doves. And, you know, Garrison Keillor has a new novel out, Liberty. Charles Baxter's book came out a couple years ago, but it is new in paperback this year. It's a very chilling novel of college students, one college student who is actually kind of trying to crawl inside the life of another student and kind of steal his identity, not in an identity theft kind of way. This isn't about computers, but it's about stealing his life. And it is just, it's a harrowing read. You know, it's not a gory mystery, but it is a very complex book. It's a lovely read.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about summer books, summer reads, best reads, good books for this summer. You can join us. What are you reading this summer? Clive James, Yi-Yun Lee, Christopher Buckley, Eleanor Lipman, Dennis Lehane. Are you plugged into Child 44, Low Boy, Beat the Reaper, The Moonflower Vine? Are you still reading on paper this summer or on Kindle now with Liesl Schillinger, contributor to the New York Times Book Review, joins us from New York, from Seattle. We're joined by Jamil Zaidi. He's a manager at the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, independent bookstore there. And from St. Paul, Minnesota, by Laurie Hertzel, senior editor for books at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You can see each of their complete lists of recommendations for the summer at our website, onpointradio.org. Let's go to Norfolk, Virginia, and Alex. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good. What are you reading?
I'm reading The Fountainhead, and I love it by Anne Rhine.
That's fantastic. Who does it? How old are you, Alex? May I ask?
Yeah, actually, I'm 23.
Perfect age.
I just rediscovered her. I was recommended actually by my mom, and I love the idea of the individual against the collective society and the two main characters that sort of represent the different ideals of a person can take in their life.
It's big and fat and goes almost. Are you signed up to go right on into Atlas Shrugged and right on down the Ayn Rand Road?
Well, it is my first book by her, so I am kind of captivated, so I believe I will be reading Atlas Shrugged next.
Alex, that's great. Liesl, Laurie, I mean, there is a window where Ayn Rand captures people, in my experience anyway.
She's really big right now. You know, there's been a kind of renaissance. Yeah, there's a big article, I think, The New Yorker about it. And also, certainly, she seems prescient in The Fountainhead about the rise of, I don't know, corporate interests in publishing. So I think maybe it goes well with today's mood, today's WTA rowdiness, WTO, excuse me, rowdiness.
Right.
What does Laurie think?
Comes in waves. Alan Greenspan was caught by her years ago, and now a new generation, Laurie.
Oh, those books, they changed my life when I was 16, but then I kind of changed back again when I got a little older. But, you know, it's so easy to get swept up, and then they're so romantic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these there's a character, I think it might be an Atlas Shrugged, who walks as if a cape is fluttering behind him in the wind.
Oh,
I mean,
that's
how can
we
you resist
walk,
that? It's lovely. Yeah.
That's great. Alex, enjoy it. Enjoy it. David in Hartford, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
I don't think that summer would be summer without P.G. Woodhouse. And for me, I came to P.G. Woodhouse not through Bertie Wooster, which is a standard track, but through the Blandings Castle novels, and then particular one called Service with a Smile, which I have to read at least once a year. It's the only book that I just laugh out loud uncontrollably every time I read it.
Talk about time travel and a cultural trip. You know, what frame of mind does P.G. Woodhouse put you in, David?
It's pure escapism. I first started reading them when I had been laid off, actually, and even though I didn't have income, I have ended up reading maybe 35 of his novels. And the level of escape is just wonderful. You can read a book in a single night time, or you can, you know, come back after a week or two off and you still know what's going on. The characters from one book interact with characters in another. So he's just amazing at creating an alternate world that can serve as a sort of resting place for you, which is just perfect for summer.
That very reassuring world of sort of English order there with P.G. Woodhouse and 35 under your belt. You're deep in it. That's wonderful, David. I got another message online here. This is from a skeptic. This is Marty in Vermont, and says, Tom, I'm afraid you've been pulled into what is simply a marketing campaign for the publishing industry. Summer reading, lazy, hazy days of summer in this economic environment. I hear it, but I guess I just don't agree. I mean, Jamil, you're there. You literally sell books. So, okay, but on the other hand, all marketing aside, I wouldn't know what summer was without a book, and it hardly takes a fortune to find one somewhere on a shelf that's free and unread.
There are always used books, and they're getting outside, I think, is for most people what summer is all about, and there's only so much physical activity that you can do. I think reading is a great way to be outside in the glorious weather that we have during the summertime and, you know, while away time and be transported off to a different place. Like I said earlier, it's a great value for the money, no matter whether it's electronic or a print book or a used book or whatever. It's, you know, every hour that you get out of a book is tremendously valuable to me, at least.
Liesl, this is kind of a shot across the bow of the kind of work you do. I mean, is talking about books, celebrating, exploring books, is shilling for books?
Is that a pun?
No, I don't know, but
I have a rereading shelf in my book in my house that has hundreds of books, and I read a lot of those in summer. I read Graham Greene and Somerset Maugham time and time again. Yeah. Same thing with P.G. Woodhouse. My first Woodhouse was Pigs Have Wings, which is set at Blanding's Castle. I won't give you an anecdote, but it's just so funny. And what I'm actually reading, I was at the beach last week, and I read, I was actually reading The Great Gatsby and Bright Lights, Big City, which I've probably read four times each anyway. But we're talking kind of about what are the special books of this year and some old favorites. And if it's too commercial to talk about the books that are out, then I don't know how these new books will live. I think the man is too good for the world.
Take us on down your list, Liesl. Give us some more recommendations here.
Well, Lori was talking about Charles Baxter's sensitive, intricate soul thief about a man trying to steal another's identity. A more offhand, lazy, fun, weird summer book that I really enjoyed is called Out of My Skin by John Haskell. Mm. And it's about a man who's kind of, and he's like, he's about 40. He goes to L.A. He wants to write about movies, but he's kind of useless and he's kind of faffing around, not doing much. And he decides to try to write an article about celebrity impersonators. And he becomes obsessed with the man who impersonates Steve Martin. Then the man himself begins to try to impersonate the impersonator, to try himself to be Steve Martin-like, to see if that will make his life get focus. It's a quirky book, and it shows the aimlessness of that summer Venice Beach sort of shiftless under the palms feeling. Mm. Another book I really like is Losing Mom and Pup is Just Quirky by Christopher Buckley, whose father, of course, was William F. Buckley, and his mother, Pat Buckley, who both died. And this is just a memoir about a quirky family. And there aren't all that many authentic American eccentrics, but I think the Buckleys qualify. And Losing Mom and Pup is fun for that. Your reader who called in about Gettysburg, In summer, people sometimes want to learn as well as just to find escape. Mm-hmm. And so I think nonfiction and bio are fun for that. War stories, those are fun. But another quirky book that I've enjoyed is called The Tall Book by Ariane Cohen. It's about a woman who's 6'3". She's done this incredibly amusing and thorough research about what it means to be tall. Apparently you get like $780 extra a year if you're over 6'4". Like for every inch of height, you get another $700 a year. This is statistical across nations.
I've got to pick that up and see why it's not in my paycheck yet.
Oh, really? Are you a lucky?
I'm a tall guy, yeah.
You loom large. Well, she says the disadvantage is that pigeons take off into her head, but apart from that, it's a funny book.
We've got online listeners recommending City of Thieves by David Benioff, that famously received Buddy Tale from the Siege of Leningrad, the story of Edgar Sawtelle, The Bridge of Sighs by Richard Russo, and maybe for these times, hard times, a book by Timothy Egan, The Worst Hard Time, The Untold Story of Those Who Survived the Great American Dust Bowl, that from Sharon online. Jamil, take us on down your list. What else have you got there?
Well, I have Beat the Reaper by Josh Basil. This is just pure fun. Summertime, to me, you know, it can be escaping into another world, or it can be just having a wild ride. That's what this is.
Hitman turned medical intern, if I got that right?
Exactly, yes. He's a hitman in the Witness Protection Program. He's, he's become a doctor or a medical intern, and he's doing his rounds one day and walks into a treatment room, and there is one of his former mafia associates who's dying of cancer. And basically says,
"Wow, what a setup!
You save me, or I will tell the mob where you are." And it's this wild ride from there. Just great. Basil is a doctor, and so he has all of these incredibly vivid, visceral descriptions of bones breaking and horrible things happening to people that maybe sound not so great, but there's a comic tinge to it that just makes it such a fun read.
What a death threat from the patient to the witness program intern. That's a kind of role reversal. Give us another, Jamil.
Well, I'm gonna cheat a little bit here. There's a book that I'm really, really excited about. It's not out yet. It will come out Tuesday, I think the 16th of June.
So that's all right.
Tuesday,
okay.
The next Tuesday. It's called The Angel's Game, and it's by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. He is the much celebrated author of The Shadow of the Wind, came out a few years ago. It's one of my favorite books that I've read. And this one is what he set about to do is write four novels that all take place in Barcelona in the same neighborhood over different periods of time. Mm-hmm. And the characters kind of are interwoven, but there's no order to them necessarily, or you don't have to read all of them. So this is the second one, and it actually takes place before Shadow of the Wind.
I love Barcelona. Is the setting important in this book?
Very much so, yes. His writing takes you right into the streets, and his writing is beautiful, and you very much feel as though you're in the streets of Barcelona with the people, and you get very much the flavor of the culture. It's just a fabulous book. The Shadow of the Wind is a fabulous book as well.
And then you've got on your list Child 44 and The Secret Speech. Well, Child 44 follows The Secret Speech was the one that came out last summer, right?
Child 44 came out last summer. The Secret Speech just came out recently.
This is a Tom Robb Smith, and it was an investigator chasing a serial killer through Stalin's Soviet Union in The Secret Speech and Child 44?
Yes, Child 44 is in Stalin's Russia, and there is a killer on the loose killing children. And in Stalin's communist ideal, having a homicidal maniac running around is not permissible. They didn't want to admit to that. And so this secret police officer has to reconcile finding this killer with not being able to really talk about or investigate it publicly. And just basically his hands are tied, and it's not really a mystery, more of a suspense as to how he's going to get himself extricated from the situation that he's in, where he's basically damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Mm.
Child 44, Tom Robb Smith. Lori, give us another couple.
Well, I was trying to think, what do people want to read in the summer? And I don't read a lot of mysteries myself, but I think that people do love mysteries. And the one that I have on my list is one that I did read and is really fun. It's called Starvation Lake by Brian Grewley. The main character is kind of a washed-up newspaper guy, so I had to love him for that reason. And he also plays hockey, so I had to love him for that reason as well. And it's just a very fun, beautifully written story. A snowmobile is pulled up out of the lake, and everyone assumes that this guy had driven the snowmobile into the lake and died by accident, but now they're finding bullet holes in the snowmobile, so the mystery opens up from there, and this kind of washed-up newspaper guy helps solve it. It's a lot of fun.
And then you've got another older one here from Eric Newby. This is 1958, A Short Walk in the Hindu Kush, sort of up there, in the mountains in northeastern Afghanistan. I know that territory a little well, but I've never read this one. Tell us about it.
Well, I tout Eric Newby every chance I get. He's just a wonderful writer. He died a couple of years ago. He was a travel writer for the London Observer and wrote wonderful books. They're intelligent. They're funny. His sense of humor is always directed at himself, though. He never makes fun of the places he visits. He kind of pokes fun at himself as a sort of clueless Brit. And he has that very dry English sense of humor. So in this book, he and his friend Hugh decide to take what he calls a short walk in the Hindu Kush. And if you are familiar with Afghanistan, you know that these are extremely rugged mountains,
yes.
And it's not a short walk.
No.
It's arduous. He almost dies. They want to hike to Nuristan. And what this gives you is a very different glimpse of Afghanistan than what you were going to get today on the nightly news. And that is why I put it on the list. It seemed timely to me. But it's also just a great tale. He encounters, you know, various tribal leaders and this culture that is just tucked away back in the mountains that is nearly inaccessible. When he starts off, he's never been mountain climbing before. So he and his buddy go to Wales and they take a little course in mountaineering, which they come close to failing. And then they go off to Afghanistan for their short walk. It's a wonderful book.
Sounds terrific and good perspective on our times maybe this summer. Here's a question from Lorene in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. She's asking, she's got a 9-year-old and a 16-year-old, always looking for things that they can all enjoy as a family. The last one they found was the Harry Potter series. Suggestions, dear panel?
Well, it's
9, 16, and adult. don't know, but we'll take a suggestion anyway. Something that might span Dickens, did I hear?
Yeah, why not? Why not read them, David Copperfield?
Oh yeah, that sounds great, Jamil. What about off your shelves?
Wow, there is so much stuff. I think that with the Harry Potter books, the market really has sort of exploded. There's a book called The Alchemist, and I believe the author's last name is Scott. I'm blanking right now.
But Alchemist, it's, okay.
That one could be a really good one.
Good, good. And Liesl, give us another one or two off your list. I've got just a minute and a half here.
For kids or for my list?
No, I mean, just your list.
Oh, for my list? Well, I think Outliers is kind of fun. I've been seeing it on the subway, along with Lowboy,
Malcolm Gladwell's
new book. I'm actually reading Blink right now, but then I ran and got Outliers. Because in Blink, the idea was that basically what people think in a flash often is right. And why is that? The idea of outliers is people don't just succeed because they work so hard, as much as we like the rags-to-riches idea. Success also takes luck. And it's really interesting to
everybody
read the
loves
examples
those.
He gives to show that.
Yeah, and I see it. What's this on your list from Julia Melucci? I loved, I lost, I made spaghetti?
There's a whole fleet of cooking memoirs, and I compare them to Bridget Jones's cookbook instead of Bridget Jones's diary. But there's about five or six of them out this summer. It's a real trend. Julia is a lively, appealing, pretty 40-ish editor in New York. She works in publishing. And for 20 years, she's been dating and cooking different meals for different men. And the boys, you know, the meals have come and gone, and so have the men.
Wow.
But the book is just... I actually have several friends who admitted that they started reading it and couldn't put it down. It's definitely a fun summer read, and it's really fun because she'll give recipes and say, put some ginger in it, but not for Dave Smith.
Sorry, I love that. And we've got a lot more on these lists, family planning and The Red Convertible. We didn't get to really talk about Drood, The Dark Volume, The Last Dickens, and so much more. It is always great to talk about books, I have to say. Liesl Schillinger, you're always great to talk with when it comes to books. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a great summer, Liesl.
Well, thank you. You too, Tom, and everyone.
Jamil Zaidi at the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, Washington. Jamil, great to have you.
Thanks very much, Tom.
And Lori Herzl at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Thank you for joining us, Lori.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Happy reading, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.